What's up, Breakthrough Success listeners? Mark Caberti, the podcasting coach here, helping people launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts. And if you want to be really successful with the podcast or anything in general, you have to tap into your inner freak, being able to discover your unique potential and reach parts of yourself that you may not be fully tapping into that can help you grow your business, can help you with all the other goals in your life as well. So we're going to talk about that in this episode. And the guest who joins us today, he's on a mission to be hilarious and helpful. We have a guest who is a stand-up comedian with a doctorate in management and a class clown turned leadership professor. He went from disrupting classes to teaching classes to disrupting companies and conferences from Portland to Paris to Pakistan. And one of the interesting things is his clients, he's actually helped a lot of people, including the U.S. Air Force, Australian government, and Fortune 50 companies such as Microsoft, AT&T, United Healthcare Group, Fannie Mae, and State Farm. We also have this guest is also, he does Ironman triathlons and ultramarathons. I've only done one marathon in my lifetime, so the fact that you've done ultramarathons is insane. So our guest is none other than David Rendell. David, welcome to the show.
I'm excited to be here.
David, I'm so happy to have you on Breakthrough Success. And I feel like it is important for us to really tap into what you refer to as that freak factor, our ability to fully tap into ourselves and our potential. I wonder if you could share a little bit on what you see as the freak factor and what it means to you.
Yeah. So what the freak factor means to me is it's something I sort of discovered through my personal experience. I was always in trouble when I was a kid, and even early on in my work, it's always in trouble because I couldn't sit still and be quiet and do what I was told. And people told me that if I was ever going to be successful, I had to learn to sit still, be quiet, and do what I was told. And now I'm a professional speaker, and I get paid to stand up, not to sit down. I get paid to talk, not to be quiet, and I get paid to run my own business, not to do what other people tell me to do. So I learned that my weaknesses were also strengths, that all the things that people said I had to fix in order to be successful not only didn't need to be fixed, they actually needed to be embraced and amplified. And so that's the freak factor, is recognizing that your weaknesses are oftentimes your strengths, and that the things that people think and that we sometimes think are the worst things about us are oftentimes our best qualities, and we need to amplify those things instead of trying to moderate them or dial them back.
And it is interesting you mentioned this idea where society was telling you you had to do one thing and your success is predicated on you pretty much doing some of the complete opposite things, like standing up and speaking instead of sitting down and being quiet. So it is really interesting how it happened that way. I feel like there are some people that, I mean, it's impressive, like when you hear one thing and you do the other and it works out. I feel like there are some people who they may have that freak factor right now, but they're not really tapping into it, where maybe they're being told to, for instance, sit down, be quiet, and they're doing just that. So how do you suggest we tap into the freak factor, even though it runs contradictory to what society says, or even like people who we really trust?
Yeah. So the first part is figuring out what your unique sort of strength weakness combinations are. So there's an assessment in the book. It's also on my website. But it's pretty intuitive once you think about it. So for example, somebody whose strength is that they're really persistent often gets criticized because they're too stubborn. So the first question is asking, what's the upside that's related to that thing that people are criticizing about me? And so once you can figure that out, you know, oftentimes messy people are very creative. Organized people can sometimes be inflexible. Sometimes people love it that you're direct and honest, but other people think you're blunt and rude. So it's seeing that upside and then asking yourself, how can I turn up the volume on that upside? How can I find situations that reward me for that upside? And you're right, we do get a lot of that advice to fit in, to do what we're told, to follow the rules. And I think that's where it starts, is recognizing what our unique strengths are and realizing that those unique strengths are oftentimes found in those weaknesses that people are criticizing about us.
And yeah, it is interesting, again, how a weakness, it could be one thing to someone, but it could be something different to another person. Like being super organized, that's usually seen as a strength, but then sometimes it's really hard to be flexible if there's a schedule change or if someone wants to jump into your schedule. So like it's just the way that you view things, that if you can frame the weakness in a way that it turns into a strength. I mean, I really do like that concept, but can you talk a little bit about what kind of weaknesses like we should frame as strengths, or is there any like category of weakness that we shouldn't be doing this with, or can this really be applied to anything?
Yeah, I mean, we've been able to apply it to businesses. It even applies to things that can oftentimes be physical. So, for example, one of the examples, I had the pleasure of speaking with a guy whose name was Matt Stutzman, and Matt Stutzman doesn't have any arms. And yet he's the world record holder for the longest, most accurate shot in archery. And what he argues is that lacking arms is actually an advantage. Missing arms is an advantage in archery. And it seems like it obviously couldn't be, because you need arms for archery. In fact, it seems like all you'd need. It seems like you could do archery without legs, but you couldn't do it without arms. And what he explains is he uses his leg to hold the bow. And he says, my leg is bigger or stronger than anybody's arm could possibly be. And so I have more strength. So I have more stability. So I have more endurance, and I have more accuracy. I'm better because I don't have arms. So even in an extreme situation like that, where it seems like an obvious negative, an obvious problem, there's an upside. So I think, you know, it's something to look for in almost any situation. I wouldn't argue that every negative is a positive, but even in situations that you wouldn't expect, in Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath, he talks about people who lose a parent early on in life oftentimes grow up to be more successful than people who don't. And certainly, as he says in the book, we don't want to go around taking away people's parents to make them more successful. But what he shows is that seemingly negative adversity, that seeming problem, is actually an advantage. So that concept that things we look at negatively can oftentimes also be significant positives really applies over a broad range of things, including businesses and including physical problems or other things like that.
Wow. I mean, that is a really fascinating story you mentioned. I thought of Sean Stevenson. Not sure, yeah. If you know, but I'd be like, I had about the show. Anyone who's been following knows what happened. And
yeah.
Yeah. But I definitely thought about him, but you were talking about a guy who had the record at archery of no arms, which is very inspiring. I do feel like when you have some kind of thing that people are saying there's a problem with, I think one of the big things that happens is people feel inadequate, or people don't feel good about themselves. And I feel like being born without arms, or, I mean, in Sean's case, like, being born the way he was born, but still being a super successful speaker, inspiring millions of people. How can we like have some kind of circumstance or weakness, or society's telling us something, but not feel like we're not enough, or we're not good, or we're adequate, or something like that, just because of a label someone is putting on us?
Yeah. So in the book, we talk about that assessment piece, seeing how it can also be a strength. I think that's a big part of it. I think finding role models and people like a Sean Stevenson, or whoever it is who is being successful while maybe potentially struggling with the same thing or dealing with the same thing, or even when they're not, seeing that, for example, one of the examples I use in the book is a bunch of people with dyslexia have become billionaires. So the founder of IKEA had dyslexia and he became a billionaire. Richard Branson, the founder of the Virgin Series of companies, had dyslexia and he became a billionaire. Paul Orfila had dyslexia. He started a business called Kinko's and became a billionaire. And so I think seeing those success examples of people who have these huge weaknesses that were also strengths and how they use them to succeed, that's what the Freak Factor does, is shares a lot of those stories to where at some point, I think it does change the way we feel about ourselves. You're like, wait a second, if their weakness is a strength, maybe mine is too. If something as bad as having no arms or having dyslexia can also be a strength, then whatever's wrong with me can also be a strength. So I think, you know, you make a great point. I think the first step is to give people hope. I think there's that assessment. And then the next step is that acceptance, accepting who I am, but not just accepting who I am, but really appreciating who I am, really being excited about it. Paul Orfila, the guy who founded Kinko's, said, I wish everybody had dyslexia, right? He's so excited about his disability, and because he sees the upside, he sees the other side of the story, that now he wishes everybody had it. He doesn't wake up every morning. And in fact, they asked him, if we could give you a pill that would cure your dyslexia, would you take it? And he said, absolutely not. Because if you destroyed my weakness, you would destroy my strength. When you fixed that disability of mine, you'd take away one of my competitive advantages. So you're exactly right. That's the kind of point that I'm trying to get people to with my speeches, with my books, with the assessment and things like that, is when you can't you're not going to amplify it. You're not going to look for the right fit. Even the subtitle says discover uniqueness by flaunting weakness. And flaunting means to parade without shame. It means to be unapologetic and unashamed. And as you're pointing out, what the world wants to do is make us feel ashamed, because if we're ashamed, then we'll behave the way they want us to. If they can make us feel bad about ourselves, then we're more likely to look to them and say, well, how should I behave? How should I act? Who should I be? And that's not what I'm encouraging people to do. So you're right. It starts with being able to get rid of those feelings of shame and that you need to apologize for who you are and that you're inadequate and not good enough. And part of the way you can do that is looking at those success stories and examples of people. Find me the perfect person who everything was right about them and then they made it. That's not really the story that you hear. And the more you look for it, the more you can find these weakness strength combinations in just about everything.
Yeah, and I definitely relate to that, the whole dyslexia piece. I mean, I know David John had dyslexia also. I've read a few of his books, part of being an ambassador for some of those books. And I mean, he talks about the hard work at TOEFL, just read and do work. You need that extra work ethic to read it. That if you're speaking, that comes a lot easier. And then you still have the same work ethic. And in my case, I have food allergies, which forced me to be different from society very early on. Then I became a Red Sox fan of New York, so I think that really set me up. Yeah, it's hard sometimes, especially last year was fun, but this year's a little stressful. But that made it easier for me to be different. That made it easier for me to do this podcast, write all the books I've read, to follow a different path. So that's my little story there from the personal, which turned professional also. I'm wondering, how can we apply this from a business context, looking at business strengths and weaknesses and being able to apply the freak factor that way?
Yeah. So we wrote a new book called Pink Goldfish with a friend of mine named Stan Phelps, and it's about how business flaws can be strengths as well. One of the best examples is a company called Buckley's. They make this cough syrup in Canada and they wanted to expand. And the problem was their cough syrup tastes terrible. So the obvious thing that you would do in most of those situations is fix it, try to make it better, make it minty flavored, make it cherry flavored, make it new and improved, and just make it better. And instead, they just bragged about it. They flaunted it. They decided to be unapologetic and unashamed. So one of their ads was that people swear by it and add it. It tastes awful because it works. They did a taste test where they compared they did a blind taste test. It was fake. But it was just supposed to be funny. And they had people blindfolded tasting Buckley's alongside of trash bag leakage. And people would prefer the Buckley's over the trash bag leakage. They would taste the Buckley's and then they would taste some sweat from some dirty gym socks. And they would prefer the sweat from the dirty gym socks. So instead of apologizing about how bad their cough syrup tasted, they said it tastes even worse than you can possibly imagine. And their market share went up. They were able to attract new customers. And some people do take the cough syrup because they feel like it's working because it tastes awful. That if it tastes that bad, it must be doing some kind of good. And they were able to succeed by bragging about, by amplifying that supposed weakness. And so Pink Goldfish, we talk about a lot of examples like that. I just saw one the other day. I was in Target and I saw this book called P is for Pterodactyl. And I was like, well, P isn't really for pterodactyl. Starts with the T sound, not the P sound. That's a stupid alphabet book. And I saw it, the subtitle said the worst alphabet book ever. Right. And look, it got my attention and I don't have kids who would read the kids book. Like, my kids are beyond that age. So why am I even looking at that book? I'm looking at the book because it's so unusual and because it's flaunting a weakness. It's trying to be bad in a world where everybody tries to write a good alphabet book. And that's part of what to think about a business. It's hard to be the best at just about anything. There's a lot of competition for that. Nobody's trying to be the worst. And so there's a lot of interesting ways to be the worst at certain kinds of things. I was just on a podcast recording earlier today with somebody else, and he does a 10-minute podcast. And some people go, oh, well, I guess that's fine for you, but we really try to go deep on our podcast. And so they see it as a weakness that his podcast is so short, but I guarantee you some people listen to the podcast because it's so short, right? It's not a weakness, it's a strength when you find the right people, when you find the right audience. And so I ended up paying attention and telling people all over the world about this P is for Pterodactyl book. It's in the top 1,000 on Amazon.com. The guy's not trying to write a good alphabet book. He was trying to write a bad one. So Like inside is K is for night and T is for tsunami. He keeps giving examples of times where the letter doesn't make the sound and a kid won't learn anything from that other than English is confusing. But it's a hilarious book. And now people are buying it, obviously, probably who don't even have kids because it's just funny and it's interesting. And so one of the ways to stand out, one of the ways to differentiate, one of the ways to break away from the crowd is to embrace your flaws and to flaunt your weaknesses as an organization. And that's what we talk about in Pink Goldfish.
We've got more coming up on the episode about getting over this idea of being perfect, success habits, a lot more awesome insights. And in addition to listening to Breakthrough Success episodes, one way to get a ton of awesome insights is through Skillshare. I've put dozens of my own classes, some of my top content on Skillshare, and you will find thousands upon thousands of classes for you to choose from so you can learn the skills that will help you get to the next level in your business, whether it's investing, using Facebook ads, social media marketing, or getting clients. There is a course for you on Skillshare. So if you want to get 2 free months of Skillshare, make sure you use the coupon code Breakthrough, or just head over to skillshare.com/breakthrough. All right, let's jump right back into the episode. And those are some really fascinating examples. Now, for some people, it's not always like for some brands, it may not always be the right path. But I mean, like for certain people, I mean, like at brands, like that could be a very strategic decision. I mean, to get a book in the top 1,000 on Amazon for people who don't know is an insane accomplishment. Yeah. And that's easily hundreds of dollars a day, if not thousands of dollars a day from that one book. So it can be very profitable to do something like that. Like you don't want to, I feel like so many people, they want to hide their weaknesses in an attempt to look perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
We all know perfection isn't real. We all look at social media and think you've got like the tremendous lifestyle, but we all know it's not getting posted on social media. So, I mean, it's definitely a really great point that you touch on.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just for some. I think there's an element of that kind of flaunting weakness and doing the opposite, doing things differently that can work even in small ways. Like Amazon, at meetings inside of Amazon, they don't do presentations. They don't have people put up slides and talk about things. They have people write it out, hand it to people on a 6-page memo, and people read it in the meeting and then they discuss it. So they're completely doing the opposite of what every other company does. When you need to share an idea in most companies, you get up and you do a presentation. And so there's a lot of ways that people can do this. In fact, I even saw one of those, I was watching YouTube videos and, you know, a lot of times those little infomercial kind of online marketing kind of things pop up. And someone, like you said, they've got the house and the Ferrari and the beautiful woman and the boat and this amazing lifestyle, and the video is all about all of their success, and then they're trying to sell you that success. And I saw one recently where these guys were like, you know, hey, this is my 1997 Mazda Miata, right? And they were just in this crappy parking lot up against this brick wall, and they're like, we make sometimes hundreds of dollars in a month. And, you know, the whole thing was the opposite of every one of those things. And basically what they were betting on was that the fact that they were being honest about some of the difficulties, being honest about some of the realities, being honest about their story was going to attract some people to be interested in what they had to say. So instead of bragging about how amazing they were admitting their flaws, they were being transparent, and they were flaunting it, and it was hilarious. Most of the time I just wait for it to be over and I click on, I paid attention to theirs, right? So I think there's uses, even if it's just in a small way, for just about any brand. I mean, I'm speaking later this year in Nebraska, and their slogan for Nebraska tourism used to be Nebraska nice. But nobody really thinks Nebraska's nice, and certainly nobody's planning a vacation there. You never see kids being told by their parents that they're planning a trip to Nebraska instead of a trip to Disney, right? And so they had to work that out. They had to figure out what they were going to do. They were trying to be good. They were trying to be perfect. They were trying to focus on the positive, whatever. And their new slogan, which is why I'm speaking there, because it fits perfectly with what I talk about, their new slogan is Nebraska. Honestly, it's not for everyone. And that's their actual slogan for the state. And the late night shows picked it up and newspapers picked it up because nobody admits that they're not perfect. Nobody admits that they're not for everybody. Nobody admits there's anything wrong with them. And when they did, it made Nebraska really, really attractive to a lot of people.
I mean, it was really interesting how Nebraska didn't suddenly transform into a new state. Like, it didn't have, like, all the Disney resorts, as you mentioned. It doesn't have all these different things, but it just changed the slogan. So it literally just changed the slogan. It addressed the weakness. It had the honesty factor, and all of a sudden, it's more demand. So I really do like that point you bring up. One question that I do have for you, so I wonder if you could share some of the habits you've developed that have really helped you with your success.
Yeah, I think, well, one of them is that it's the constantly building on my strengths and not trying to fix my weaknesses. Even when it seems like, well, this is that thing you've just got to fix, always asking what's the upside, always looking for another way to kind of push that. So, you know, I'm not great at sales. And yet if I don't sell my speaking, I don't have any speeches to do, right? I won't have any money. But I thought, okay, well, but I talk about, you know, flaunting weakness. What is a weakness I could flaunt that would help me with this, instead of just straight up going to seminars on how to get better at sales and trying to get more comfortable with selling things. And what I did was I made a list of everybody that I'd spoken for in the last year. I put down all their contact information. I wrote down how much I got paid. I put down as much information about the event as I could. And I sent it out to 3 different speakers that I know who are friends of mine to try to help them get more speeches. Because one of my strength-weakness combinations is I'm really generous. And sometimes that means I get taken advantage of and taken for granted. And sometimes I give money to people who don't really need it, whatever. I'm a softie. I've got a bleeding heart, whatever you want to call it. So that's the weakness, but I'm generous. That's the strength. And so I just tried to help out a bunch of my friends. And as you can probably imagine, they started helping me out, right? They were like, oh, well, wow, that was super helpful. And that's going to really help me get booked. And hey, I got this guy you should talk to who booked me in the past, and I bet he'd book you. And so really within one day, I got booked for $20,000 worth of talks from just one friend who connected me with one person who needed me to speak more than once. And all it took was a phone call. And the guy was like, if he thinks you're great, then you must be great. When do you want to do it? And we put it on the calendar. He sent me the deposit and we were ready to go. And so it's just that relentless focus on practicing what I preach and making sure that I'm living what I tell everybody else. And also, you know, practicing what I preach with other people. So when I see other people and I'm bothered by their behavior, I wish they were different, I don't like the way they're doing things, stopping myself and going, well, what's the strength? What's the upside? What's the positive? And I do that with my wife. I do that with my kids. Sometimes they frustrate me. I do that with colleagues. And so it's constantly having that filter of, wait a second, I'm not going to judge other people through my lens. And I'm not going to judge other people negatively based on my preferences. I'm going to be open to the fact that their weakness is also a strength. If what I'm saying is true, then I have to believe that in the way that I see. If I'm telling people to flaunt their weakness, then I have to be a person they can flaunt their weakness with, a person who isn't trying to shame them, a person who isn't trying to control them and get them to conform. So it's just a constant process of trying to develop myself to get better at the things that I'm good at, and to stay away from the things that I'm not good at, and to have other people in my life who can manage those things for me, because they have strengths where I have weaknesses.
And one thing that I do want to explore a little deeper, because we also have put a profitable public speaking podcast, and it is interesting how you bet you're able to make $20,000 from public speaking. I'm wondering how exactly we're able to make that happen. Like, is that just a few gigs you were able to get with big companies, or is that something else in play?
Oh, so that's a much bigger question. Okay, so I mean, I started speaking probably about 15 years ago. I mean, I think the way to be successful with public speaking is to, A, do a lot of it as much as you possibly can, wherever you can. A lot of my early speeches were obviously for free in front of smaller audiences of people who weren't paying. But I think you also have to have a unique message. You have to have something you're saying that everyone else isn't saying. And you also have to do it in an entertaining way. So I use a lot of humor. I use a lot of interesting stories. For example, nobody's sitting there listening to me talk about the guy with no arms and going, oh yeah, I've heard that story before. So, you know, it's having something unique to say. But no, it's not just a few speeches. I mean, that's my job is a professional speaker. Just in the last, 19 business days, I've done 17 speeches. in August and in September. I'll probably end up doing around 90 this year. I did 88 last year. So that's my whole job. And the way that I get speeches is by doing a good enough job that people tell other people. So I just did a speech in Toms River, New Jersey, which is north of Atlantic City. And it's because a guy saw me in Atlantic City speaking to a group in New Jersey, and he needed a speaker. And he was like, that was really good. And we want you to come to this. And I just did three speeches in Oklahoma because I spoke to some school administrators in Oklahoma earlier in the year. And they said, we want you to come to our school and speak to our school. So I went to Oklahoma three different times to speak at three different schools. Business people see me and they say, oh, I want you to come speak at my user conference or my customer conference or my internal staff conference. Or I organize this thing for this association. So really the best way to be successful as a public speaker is through referrals. And the only way to really do that is to have people so impressed when they see you speak that they say, you know, I need that somewhere else. I need that. I need other people to hear that. I need my wife to hear that. I need my kids to hear that. I need my boss to hear that. I need my employees to hear that. And so it's really tapping into that. And that's part of the way that my weakness is a strength as well, because I have ADHD. And so I'm easily bored and easily distracted. And so I try to give the kind of presentation I could pay attention to, right? I don't imagine that people have a phenomenal attention span. And so I try to keep it really interesting, really exciting, really energetic, so nobody gets bored. And I think that ends up paying off.
Yeah, it's really interesting that we got to talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure a lot of people would wonder if anyone's coming in for profitable public speaking. So I appreciate you sharing some of the insights on that. And I feel like this whole conversation about the freak factor is really going to help a lot of people really look at their perceived weaknesses in a different way and see how, like, looking at it differently, it could be a strength. Or just even looking at it as it is can be a strength also. So definitely a good way to really reassess ourselves. And for people who want to follow your work, where are some good places we can go?
Yeah, if you just go to drendall.com, that's my website, drendall.com. There's videos for my speeches. There's free versions of the assessment. There's links to the book. There's explanations of the concepts. So you could watch a little bit about pink goldfish. You could watch a little bit about freak factor. You get links to the book. If you want to follow me on social media, all the links are on there. So that's probably the best place to go, is just to go to my website, drendall.com.
David, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. All those links will be in the show notes. We will also throw in the link to schedule a free strategy call with me for anyone who wants to learn how to launch, grow, and monetize their podcast. David, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure to have you on Breakthrough Success.
Thanks a lot, man.
David, that was some really awesome stuff. Thank you for coming on the Breakthrough Success podcast. And for anyone wondering what we're going to come out with for the next episode, if you're interested in scaling your business, we have a really awesome episode coming out for you very, very soon. So in the meantime, there's a ton of podcast episodes on Breakthrough Success already to listen to. I would be super appreciative if you could leave a review, and I have a good book recommendation for you as well.
If you want a great book to read, take a look at The Greater by Aaron Varble. Aaron gives us a futuristic view of life in the 3200s, how society changes, and who the influential people are during this period of history. One thing you learn from the book is that the more things change, the more they stay the same. This is Aaron's first novel in his nonfiction series, which you can learn more about over at nonfictionbookseries.com.
Once again, thank you guys so much for joining me on this episode of Breakthrough Success. That next one that's coming up, definitely looking forward to it. Until then, what I want you guys to do is to dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today.